Hello, and welcome everybody. First of all, nice to see so many people here. That's really great. My name is Jakob Gottlieb Svendsen, and I'm going to talk about the System Center Orchestrator Runbook Design 101. What I try to do in this session is to give you an introduction to Orchestrator, but also give you a lot of tips about how to design your stuff and how to plan your stuff. But first of all, I'd like to ask you, how many of you are using Orchestrator today? Okay, that's a lot. So how many of you have never used Orchestrator yourself before? Okay. And maybe the most important question, how many of you is looking forward to the party tonight? All right. More people looking forward to the party than using Orchestrator. Great. Hopefully there'll be more people using Orchestrator in the future, or at least use some kind of automation, because automation is the future, at least in my opinion. First of all, myself, just a short introduction. I'm from a company in Denmark, in Europe. You might be able to hear that on my accent. I usually, if I had a short description of myself, describe myself as a developer who have learned to speak to normal people. So that means I have done a lot of development and scripting and so on, a lot of PowerShell. For example, I've started the PowerShell user group. I've also done a lot of training, especially in Orchestrator, and soon also in service management automation. Anyway, you can always look this slide up if you get the slide deck. The main points in my session is, first of all, an introduction, then some planning, then something about runbook design. Then we're going to talk about best practices. And in this section, I also have a section called Watch Out, which will show you what not to do. Then we're going to look into logging. And in the end, something about stage tracking, which means to be able to resume at a specific point in your workflow. First of all, the introduction. Orchestrator has three main concepts. The first is the activities, and each of these activities, since I'm from Denmark, I always compare them with Lego blocks, or Lego bricks, are they called. You can take each of these activities and turn them into something more advanced. Each of these activities does, they usually do one task each, like sending an email, or something like querying a database, or it could be more advanced stuff like provisioning a virtual machine. We put these together into a runbook, which is a collection of these activities. So you can see here is a few activities is put into order by connecting them with these green arrows. The nice thing about the Orchestrator system is that we can easily see what's going on, and we can easily talk to people who are non-developers that what's really going on and show them the actual process is happening. We can also apply colors, which means that it's easy to see what is the successful links and what is the errors. For example, here is a red arrow that points to the email activity, which will then send an email when it fails. To understand how these things work, we need to know something about the data bus. The data bus is something built into Orchestrator, which makes it easy for us to share the result of one activity and put it into the input of another activity. This means that if the first activity executes, it outputs some kind of result. This result has been the schema of the result has been made by the developer of the activity. In some cases, we can set it up ourselves, but in many cases, they are already prepared for us. So an activity will output something that has something to do with the activity that just run. Next up, we can take this result and put it into the next activity, and we can then use the result of the last activity. For example, in this case, it's from Data Protection Manager, and the first activity will get a data source ID by searching for the name, for example, of a specific data source. When we have found the ID, we are able to create a recovery point for this ID. Therefore, we can use the ID to put into the create recovery point. But of course, the create recovery point makes a result too and puts this into the data bus. This means that the third activity, which is from service manager, can go in to service manager and update a ticket, a service request, with the information from each of these activities that were that was run before. And of course, when this finishes, it will then output the output of the activity to the data bus. To be able to integrate into different systems, which Orchestrator is meant to be used for, we have something called integration packs. You can compare an integration pack with like a toolbox for a specific job. In this case, you can see the screenshot. It's the service manager integration pack, and it has a lot of activities to operate inside service manager. It makes it easy for us to connect to service manager and do whatever we need to do. You can kind of compare it to a PowerShell module, which also includes a lot of functionality for a specific job. We can also make our own integration packs, but there is a lot of them available already, some provided by Microsoft, which means that they are supported by your support agreement, which means even the ones for HP Service Manager, you can get help setting this up by contacting Microsoft support because they have full support. But you can also make your own from PowerShell scripts or from .NET code. There's also a few vendors which sell these integration packs. And of course, there is CodePlex, which is a site where you can share open source stuff. And there's a lot of stuff there to get both utilities, which is really nice utilities, and also a lot of integration packs. Throughout this session, I will use a specific example in most of my examples that you will see. It's a very simple example to deploy a website. And I know there's plenty of other systems to deploy a website, but it's a nice simple example that everybody can understand. First, to deploy a website, we need to have a folder to put the files in. That is the website. Next up, we need to copy the content into this folder. Of course, I have a prepared, very beautiful website you will see in a second that will be copied into the folder. And in the next step, we can then create the website in the Internet Information Services. The last point of this is there's many systems to create and deploy a website. But what you can do when you have a specific customizable system like any kind of automation system such as Orchestrator is that we can put an extra test on it to make sure that our website works. We can define our own test to make sure it works. So let me go to the first demo so you can see how a basic runbook looks and how it works. Just a second. All right. First of all, you should see my website I've made, very advanced. Maybe there is a reason why I'm not working in marketing. Or web design, that is. But you see this website has the TechEd logo, and it also has a title up here, says System Center Orchestrator. And what I want to do is to, first of all, deploy this website to a computer, to a server that I've provisioned. And also, I want to check if the result of the website is correct. So I'll go in and ask the website for its content, and I'll go and look for this title up at the top. So I'll just copy this title so I can use it in just a second. When you create your runbooks, start here. When you create your runbooks, you use the runbook designer. And to create a runbook, what you'll do is to, over here you have all the integration packs. I have a lot of them. But in each of them, you can then get these activities and you can drag them into your runbook. So you see, I've already pre-made some of it. I've inserted a start activity, then the create folder. This start activity is inserted because then I can define inputs so that when I start the runbook, I will be asked for these inputs. And the inputs is like, where is the content that it needs to copy? Where should it put the content? And what should the website name be? Then we create the folder, go and copy the content files. And to create the website itself and the application pool for the website, I have inserted a small PowerShell script, which will go in and provision this website on the server that I define. But I'm missing one step, which was to test this website if it works. Luckily, in the monitoring category out here, I have the Get Internet Application Status, and I can drag this in here. So you see, if I zoom in a little bit, that when I have my the cursor over an activity, there is an input and an output here, and I get this crosshair if I have the cursor over the output. I can then drag from the output into the input of another activity, and I've then linked the two activities. This means that by default, if the create site activity is successful, then we'll go to the next activity, the get application status, and run it. To set up this activity, I then just double click, and I open the forms for it. The cool thing about one of the cool things about Orchestrator is that these forms are custom made for each activity, which means that it doesn't just say this is input number 1 to 30 or output number 1 to 30. It only shows you the specific fields that we need to fill in. So what I'll do here is, first of all, I need to check this website. And in this simple demo, it's just provisioning a website as the on the default port 80. So I can just go in and write the URL. HTTP, and then I can insert the computer name from which I've provisioned the site on. To do this, I need to use the data bus. So I go in and right-click and select subscribe to publish data. This gives me the option to select any result from the activities beforehand, and I can, of course, go to the start, for example, and I can select the computer name which the website has to be provisioned on, and I can then insert it in here. So this inserts this weird tag that shows you that in here is not fixed data, in here is a result from an earlier activity. Down here I can actually insert then which string I want to look for. So I paste the title, which I copied just a second ago. Actually, this internet information status activity is pretty cool because we can test other stuff. We can test SMTP or POP3, FTP. We can even do a custom test, which is kind of like a telnet session, where we can go and check if a specific port answers in a specific way, and yeah, very advanced stuff if we want to do that. In this case, it's just a regular website, so I'll just keep it on the default one. Finish. Yes. When I've done, finished my runbook, and I think it's working, then I can go in and run it in the tester, as you can see here. There's something called runbook tester. And if I hit the right button, yep. In this tester, it can actually execute the runbook from my own computer, which I'm developing the runbook at, and I can easily see the result of each of these activities. So I'll try to do that now and see if it will deploy the website. And as I said, it will ask me for the inputs. So here I'll type SEO and demo. That's where I have my files. I want to provision it on a computer called web, and we'll just call it ticket. What you'll see now is when it starts that in the log field down here, you'll see that each of these activities will appear. Let me show you. There we go. So you see it has run the create folder, then the copy files, then it's provisioning the website. And then in the end, it will go and check if this website works. And it says everything is successful, which means that if I go to the website itself, that was on web, you'll see the exact same website as before. Actually, I forgot to show you that there was no website before I started, but I can promise you there wasn't. Anyway, this is the basic concept of Orchestrator. But of course, I'm going to get back to much more details later in this session. The planning of run books or automation in general is a very important part of, and you should always spend a lot of time, as much time as needed, on it before you start even creating a run book. First of all, you should go and check where should I start? This is the main problem our customers have. They want to do everything, or maybe in some rare cases, they don't know what to automate. But usually it's the case of, we want this and that and everything, and they don't know where to start. So of course, a good place to start is to figure out something that is fairly easy to automate, so that you can learn how to do runbooks. And of course, you should always do it in a sandbox environment, because you can easily break everything if you do it the wrong way. When you then know how to do runbooks and you feel pretty confident, it's a very good idea to look at you are doing specific manual activities, for example, every day, or it's done 20 times a day, stuff that occurs often. If it occurs often, there might be an advantage in using some time on creating your automation, and then after this, you will spend much less time on it. And of course, it's not just time that is the point here. It's also that people, your workers and your employees, don't have to do the same exact task every day. They can spend their focus on more exciting things and maybe improving stuff instead of just fixing the same stuff every day. Of course, you should look at how time-consuming your manual activities are, and then compare it to how long it takes to do the runbook. And I'll get back to that in just a second. I have a few scenarios for you. But sometimes time isn't the point here. It might be something that's visible to your customers, so that you have something like your front website, and it breaks down, and you need something that can fix it quickly, that can maybe provision something so that it works. Or you have maybe some big screen TVs in your window in your shop, and customers from outside can see it, and it's pretty embarrassing if there is some kind of error message. I always take pictures every time I see like public error messages, so that we can show them to customers and say, this is not a good idea to have. Another point is if you have high-risk operations, and in high-risk operations, I mean, for example, deprovisioning a user. When you deprovision an employee or a user, you usually remove the email box, but you shouldn't just delete it in most cases. It's very rare cases where you just delete the mailbox. You might want to back it up, or you might want to give somebody else access to it before you just delete it. So if you do this manually, you might one day and usually that's Friday, just before weekend, you hit the wrong button and you delete the CEO's email or something like that. And that's what you don't want to happen. Another thing is if you have a service level agreement in some of your activities, it might be a very good idea to look into how you can fix these things quicker, and therefore, it might be a very good idea to automate those too. Let me show you, first of all, when you start to identify your processes, the most important thing is to optimize the process behind it. There's a very good quote saying, automation does not make a process better, it only makes it, a bad process better, it only makes it fail faster. So this means that it's a very good idea to look into your processes, into your manual activities, and see if they are actually good enough to be optimized, or you should optimize them somewhere. Then you should check, is Orchestrator the right tool? There might be other tools to do these tasks. You might have an identity management system that can already provision users or reset passwords or something like that. And in that case, it's not a good idea to rewrite it unless you have some specific requirements that your other tool cannot do. Then you should look into, is this actually possible? Because, of course, if you have servers who need to connect to a lot of different systems, do a lot of different tasks, they need access to this. So they need network access, They need access permissions on the users and so on. So you have to look into see what is actually required by the actions I want to take in my runbooks and figure out is it even possible to do in our current scenario so that you don't spend 2 weeks of planning and then some security guys come and say, no, that will never happen. We're not going to allow that. So of course, you should do that. And the last thing is the development cost versus the manual process. And to visualize this a little bit, I have two different scenarios. The first one is a basic task. Automate made some kind of manual task. This task happens once a month, and it takes only 20 minutes to do. It would take about a week maybe to build a runbook that has proper logging, the documentation, and so on. And I don't know if you have an answer. Would this be a good thing to automate? Let's check. This is how much time we spend on the task itself. We have the years in the bottom, and we have the hours on the other axis. We spend 4 hours each year on this task. So if we spend, in Denmark we work 37 and a half hours a week. If we spend that on our task, it'll actually take almost 10 years before we get our money back. So if this is not a high-risk operation, one that's visible to customers or have any other requirements that makes it feasible to spend the time on it, then there's no reason to automate this task. But on the other hand, if you have an incident, we could call it service stop, it could be any kind of incident. This incident happens once a day. First line receives it by telephone or email or in their ITSM system, and it uses 5 minutes on it. They send them to the some second line of supporters, which can use RDP and remote to the computer and fix to the server and fix the problem. It takes in total 20 minutes to do, and you have two different teams working on it. Again, it might take 1 week to build the runbook. Sometimes it takes only a few days. Sometimes it can take longer, but usually it's about a week for a lot of the more simple actions that you want to do. In this case, we have a completely different scenario. In the 10 years, we used 1,200 hours on it, or we used 122 hours on it in the first year. But if we fix it in 1 week, automate it, we actually still only spend these 37 and a half hours fixing these problems. Of course, if there is some kind of mishap, if you don't properly plan your runbook and it doesn't work properly, you might end up spending a little bit more time later. But you will quickly see that you will save a lot of time doing this. The third is the customer request or dream, like invent the Skynet. I know Mark Rusinovich talked about Skynet the other day, and he might be the one who can do it. But if you want to, they say, hey, we want to do everything. It just should monitor this system, then connect to some other system, then pass data into this third thing, and suddenly everything is fixed. And we don't think it will take more than maybe 14, 18 months to build the solution. And the last thing, by the way, we have never used Orchestrator before. So it's kind of like, that might not be the best place to start. This is the golden solution that, of course, it would be perfect to have, but it's not where you should start. Let's look into runbook design. And I'm starting by showing you a few examples. All right. The first thing is that when you place your runbooks on your runbook server, you put them in different folders. People tend to name a runbook like new runbook, or this is new runbook 2 or 3. This is Jakob's runbook number 40. Or you could maybe have runbooks that says this is the old version of the runbook, this is the new version. And everybody knows the thing about then What is the next version? Is that the new version? Or is it the other one that's the old version? Or yeah, like when you rename files in a not so clever way. What you should do is to, first of all, name your folders using numbers. So the first folder in the root will be called 1. And then the folder inside this folder will then be called 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, and so on. Inside this folder, you then, again, put an extra digit on it so that it's called 1.1.1 or 1.1.2. And then when we get into the folder itself and the runbook, you then see I have put an extra digit again, which makes this runbook a unique name. It has a unique name because the name describes which folder it's at and which step of which runbook in this folder it is. Besides that, it's a really good idea to put versions on it, and I actually forgot to do that on this one, but it's a good idea to put a version number in the end to make sure that that you know which version this is. The next thing you should do is when you have placed your runbooks the correct way, and I'm not saying you should use this, but you should agree on a way to build your structure so that you can find your runbooks. The next thing that you should do is to use colors. And if you look at the one I did before, this link is black. So it doesn't really describe, it doesn't say success or green or anything that's easy to see. And if I switch to one of my examples here, you'll see that this example is kind of hard to understand. It goes in and the first step says, this is a what work item class is this? But on the links, you see this one, on the links that goes from it, it just says link or link. It doesn't really describe why we go one way, why we go the other way. So a very good idea is to name your links after the condition that's in them. Let me switch to the next one, where you see it has added colors. In this, you see that all those that should run, for example here, is the success. I make them green. The ones where I have a decision, one or the other, I make them this orange color, and I also name it service request here, incident request on the bottom, so that it's easy to see what's going on. Maybe I should zoom a little bit. This makes it much easier to read your runbook, for other people to understand your runbook, and it's especially when you do your development, I always do this right away. Some people wait till they have almost finished their runbook, and then it can actually be hard to figure out exactly what you thought of 3 days ago when you made this link. The last thing is you should organize them from left to right. All right, if you are Arabic or another language that reads from the other side of the from right to left, then you could do that. But I would recommend always to start at the left and then go to the right. Because you see, the next one is the same example. It does work, but nobody will understand what's happening here. It's pretty weird. Yes? A question?
Can you either export this to Visio or import flowcharts from Visio?
There is a generator that can generate a visual diagram that can describe your runbooks. It doesn't look exactly like it does in here, but it does describe the different. The different settings you have used and so on. So if I switch back here, I'll just go through these design guide. First of all, you should rename your activities. You saw that I inserted the get application status, and if I had to use 3 or 4 of these, then I wouldn't know what one did and what the other did. So it's a good idea to rename your activities so that you know what they do. Next up, you should use these links, labels, and colors, like success, warning, or could be, which is a decision of something. You could do it from left to right. You should name your folders and your runbooks in a specific structure. And you should, agree on a specific naming convention so that your run books have the similar name so that everybody in your team understands what they do and what they are for. You should use variables. And variables is something that's in Orchestrator where you can save a value, which means, for example, if you are sending an email and you need an SMTP server address in your runbook, you could just type your SMTP server address, but then if you have to do it in 500 runbooks, then it might be a stupid idea to just write it in there, because if it changes, you then have to change all 500 runbooks. If you use variables, which is a setting that you can save, a custom setting that you create yourself, you can then insert a value into this variable, and you can insert this value into all of your runbooks, which means if you change this variable, it will change in all of the runbooks. The last thing is that it's a good idea to collect a library of standard runbooks. Instead of making big runbooks, first of all, you should never make too big of runbooks. It makes it slower, use more memory because it has to load everything. It makes it much more harder to understand your runbooks. So you should make runbooks that does simple tasks and then reuse them, and you can then put them in a library and then use them again and again. The next thing I want to show here is what I call the watch out. There's some things you should be aware of when you do Orchestrator. The first example here is a get user. The get user will go into Active Directory, search for users, and output each user to the data bus. Let's just check it. Okay. Just needs to connect to the AD. First time it's just using a few seconds to connect to AD to get the right schema and so on. And we can see here it searches for a specific, in a specific search route, which is an OU called Copenhagen, where I'm from. But it doesn't use any filters. So this means that this will find all the users that's in this OU. All right. Let me try this one. So here you go. All right, so if I start this runbook by clicking run up here, what you'll see happening is that it searches for the users, but the next activity will actually be triggered once for each result. So in this case, there were four results, and it has triggered the next step four times. This is a very useful functionality because it makes it really easy to make, for example, a runbook that adds these users to a collection, adds one user to a collection, and if you have more than one result, it'll just add all of them to a collection. But sometimes you don't want this to happen. For example, I've heard different stories. For example, somebody accidentally inserted an create incident next to the result, and they got, I think it was 200 results, so they created 200 incidents. But they just want one incident. And therefore, you have to go into your activities and do what's called flatten the data. This looks exactly the same. I have the exact same search parameters and search settings. But in the last tab here, I can do something called flatten the data in run behavior. And this is something that all activities has. It's a common thing for all of them. And you see I've checked this thing called flatten. And I can then choose to, I can then decide which separator I want. Do I want a comma-separated list? Do I want to break it, use line break so I get a nice readable list? Or do I want to use the current comma-separated file format of your computer? For example, in Denmark, we use semicolon in comma-separated files. Don't ask me why, though. So if I run this, and let's try to run this in production, when you run a runbook in production, you check it in, and it will be saved into the database. When I start this runbook, it will be triggered into the database saying there will be created a job in the database. The job will then be picked up by a server. If there is some running, let me just see. can show you that too. Yep. So we have the runbook service running here. And this has actually been grabbed, and it has actually been run. You can see here it's already run and finished. And I can actually go in and double-click this and see what happened. We can see that the get user only ran once, and it ran the next activity called send platform event. The platform event is kind of like an event log, but like a Windows event log, but it's shared by the system in Orchestrator. So if I go to events, I can see that these are the events that I have, and don't mind all the errors. This is most of them are my own fault, like testing, service breakdowns, and stuff like that. But the newest one here is about the users that was found. And you'll see here that it has found me and Kent and a guy called Mess and James Bond. So regular Cortec guys here, except Mess, of course. So what you want to do is either to flatten the data, like I showed you, or you have to change the filters in the search to make sure that you only find one user. In this case, it's a search that says equals SAM account name, which is the username, equals administrator. It will never have more than one result because it's not a contains, for example, with some stars in it. It's a specific fixed word that a username that we search for. The next thing is loops. And you might want to say, okay, let me show this as a close-up. We want to get a computer status, which means ping the computer to see if it's running. And if it's running, we want to get the disk space status. But if somehow this fails, I want to go back to the start, and I want to restart the runbook like this. Should never do this. I should actually not show this, maybe, but it's good to know because this is not supported. This means that it will try to override some log entries from the old activity, and it just gives you some weird results. What we need to do is to delete this link. And what I can do on any activity is to right click on it, and I can select looping. In the looping settings, I can go in and enable it, and I can set how much delay do I want between the attempts, and I can set when should this loop exit. For example, in this case, it should exit when the activity returns a success or the activity has tried 10 times, which means that it will retry 10 times, and if it still fails, you will then get the failed result, and it will continue to the next activity, if there is any. If you want to re-trigger a part of your runbook, you will have to put it in a separate runbook. And then you can use when you start a runbook, you use something called the invoke runbook activity. And on this activity itself, you can then enable looping, and you see it gets a nice arrow. The same thing would have happened before if I didn't press cancel for some reason. Let's just enable it. You see, it gets a nice arrow showing that it will retry at this activity. The last thing you should watch out for is when is a success a success? Might sound weird, but the activities here, they have one job each. So in this case, for example, we have a run program activity. The run program activity can start a program on a computer. If this activity is able to start the program, then the activity's purpose is successful, which means that if we want to trigger something else depending on the result of the command that we ran, then it's not this success or failed standard activity status we need to use. We need to go in and check different parameters in the result. So in this case, we want to run the program, and then we want to go into the link. You see, when you create a link, the standard, let me just delete this one. The standard will be like this if it returns success. You can then click here and say, okay, I want if it failed or whatever. But I can also click on the name here and I can select different parts of the last result. In here, there is one called program exit code. And this is what I want to check to see if my command was successful or not. I want it to be zero because that is a successful, usually a success in your when you run a command. And if it's not zero, I make the opposite one does not equal zero. It will go use the other link. So, first of all, success might not be equal to your expectation. No loops in links. You should do this only on activity level. Be sure to check if you have multiple results so that you don't trigger the next activity too many times. And if you're using library runbooks, they might be in use. So if you check it out to change it, other runbooks might fail if they are dependent on this runbook. The next thing you should do to have a proper orchestrator environment is to build modules. A module is a runbook that just one task. It makes it much easier for you to develop and test these scenarios to make sure it works. You can quickly get into a very complicated big runbook if you don't, and it's really hard to test if every step works. Another good thing is they can be used in multiple scenarios. So if you have invented the plate once, you don't have to invent it every week since then. You can reuse the same stuff. You can either use the same runbook or you can create a copy of the runbook and then use the copy instead. The only thing is that if you want to handle something that requires a lot of executions, for instance, if you know a guy called Anders who has the Contoso blog, when he started a long time ago doing Opalis and stuff, he made, it's on his blog, an example where he triggered a very nice structured runbook that executed some queries into a database. To make it simple and nicely structured, he went in and ran a runbook for each execution. The problem was there was like 1,500 or was it 15,000 executions of this runbook. And every time we start a runbook, It requires a job to be made, and it requires a runbook server to run this runbook. This is done because this is a system that has plenty of failover and it has high availability. So therefore, there might come a few seconds before it starts. And if you have to execute it 15,000 times, then a few seconds can turn into a long time. Again, if we go back to my runbook, you'll see that I've made a modular version of the deploy website. Or actually, the last step, deploy and test website, was the runbook that I just showed you in the beginning. But here I've made some more modules. First of all, we'll check if the computer runs. We're going to check if it's the correct operating system. We're going to check and enable features in Windows, make sure that Internet Information Services is installed and so on. We're going to check that it's available, there is room for this website, the port is not already in use, for instance, or the website name. And then we're going to trigger the last runbook. So this means that it's much easier for you to test, check OS, for instance, and reuse this part. There is one thing missing here, and that's logging. If you want to do a proper runbook production, you should always at least have error logging. So if something fails, you should log the error someplace. And to do that, you can use different methods. Therefore, I've made this do's and don'ts. What you shouldn't do is to use a text file. It might be the most simple thing to do, and of course it's good enough when you're just testing small runbooks. The problem is that these runbooks can run in parallel. You can set it to run 100 of the same runbook at the same time. And if you, for instance, write to the same text file using 100 runbooks, they will maybe end up in a deadlock where one user, one runbook is using the file and the other one cannot write to the file. Therefore, it's not a good idea. There's also the local event log. If you write to the local event log, you could also write to a remote event log. In the first situation where you write to the local event log, then you don't know which server it's on, because you might have 20 runbook servers running these runbooks, and which one has it logged at. The other option where you write to a remote runbook, it kind of destroys your failover stuff, because if you write to one specific computer and that computer is down, yeah, then it doesn't work. There is one exception, is that if you have SCUM monitors or you are writing to an event log because you are monitoring with a SCUM event monitor and you want to be able to make a simple Windows event log monitor in SCUM, then you might want to write to an event log. You can also write to the platform events, the one I showed you before that is built in. But these also have status messages, and everybody can insert stuff in these this event log, so it might not be the best place to log your errors. There's also a built-in logging. You can go to a runbook and you can right-click and you can enable activity-specific logging. This means that it saves all the results from each activity into the database. Problem is that, let's say you are checking files on a drive and you have a million files to check, it will save maybe 15 different text strings for each file. So I can't even calculate that number. That is a lot of information, which means, of course, that your database for Orchestrator will grow very fast. So activity-specific logging, the built-in logging, is for testing. And maybe if you have it in pre-production, you should have it on. And maybe the first few times you run it in your production, you might have it turned on, and then you should disable it. But what you should do is to log to a database. Everybody knows that a SQL Server can handle millions of queries. It's made to do that. And multiple servers can connect to it, and it can be clustered and everything. So that's a good, very good idea to use a database. If you don't want to create your own activities, and actually if you go to Anders' blog, you will actually see that he has a step-by-step guide of how to do custom database and logging. But if you don't want to do that, you can use what's called the integration pack for standard logging. And I'll show you that in just a second. If you're using an ITSM system which triggers the runbook, then you already have, for instance, a service request. There you have information about these actions that needs to be run and so on. That would be a good place to put your error messages. So if Service Manager triggers a runbook, it fails, you then write back to the service request action log to say this has failed. This means that the person who has ordered it in the self-service portal will then be able to see the error. You can also make the action log entry private so that it's only analysts who can see it. You can also create your own integration pack to write into your own database, and that is exactly what you can find on Contoso SE, a description of how to do that. All right. So if you take the exact same example, but go to the logging instead, it will look something like this. This is the standard IP for logging. And the cool thing about this is that it's very visual. So you see we have a start here, which starts a log entry in a database. And each time you either run a failure activity or a success activity, it will then update the row that the first activity has created. You can then write in 10 different custom fields, or you can write in which stage number it's at. And we can actually use this stage numbering to resume at specific points in our runbook. I'll show you that a little later. So what will actually happen here is that if this runs successfully, Orchestrator will run this one and then go to the next one here. If it fails, it will go down here and run the failure instead and log our error. In here, we can also name something called requires restart. And this means it will be marked to this should be restarted. And this means we can use another activity to figure out which runbooks needs to be restarted. When we have finished successfully, we then insert an end activity which will close the which will close this close the log file, of course. Yep, soon I'll show you another example of how to use the IP for logging. The next thing is that you should design for failover. You should make sure your runbooks can fail over. Otherwise, you could maybe just use the task scheduler on a specific computer to run something, and you wouldn't get the great advantages of having a great system like Orchestrator. Or, of course, if you are planning to use service management automation, it's built in almost the same way. We have a data store, which is our main Orchestrator database, and we have these runbook servers, which triggers the runbooks and executes the runbooks. You should, of course, have at least two of these, and you might want to have four or even more of them, depending, first of all, of how many runbooks you need to run. It could also be something about security permissions to make sure you have different of these runbook servers. The next thing you need to do is to design your runbooks so that they can support failover. This can be a little tricky to do in a runbook. I'll show you a demo in just a second. What we want to do is that if this runbook fails, what happens in Orchestrator if a runbook fails is that it will re-trigger from the beginning on another server. This means that, of course, if server one breaks down, it will start again on server two. Problem is that if this was a runbook that created, for example, the folder, like I just showed you, or it's a runbook that creates a user, then creates an email address, then creates a home folder, it might already have created the user, and then it should not retry to start and recreate the user once again. So, to do this, we'll use what's called state tracking. And state tracking is that you make sure that you log somewhere how far your runbook has run. For instance, if you create a user, then create an email address, then a home folder, then of course the user will be stage one, then email will be stage two, and so on. You can do this by using these logging activities and create a runbook, which I'll show you in a second. You can also do it by creating your own database and writing to the database and say, okay, we have reached this point. Next time, read into the database and see where we should start. Again, it's not because I'm a big fan of Anders, but actually I am, but he has a lot of great examples on his blog. And once again, he has an example that actually shows, and it's also in my examples here, which you can get after the session, how to use your own custom database to do this stuff. But I would recommend to use Service Manager if you're, of course, are using Service Manager, because it makes it much easier to handle these stages. All right, number six. Here we go. So, first example here, and this is a bit more advanced runbooks, is that I have something, a mock-up, as I call it, of how you might use stage tracking. Okay. First of all, every time I do a runbook, after I've done the initial planning, I usually make a mock-up where I insert all my activities, try to make the links, try to figure out which activities do I need for what purpose. Because I usually find out that even though you have done plenty of planning, you'll suddenly need some extra activities in your runbook. So therefore, instead of setting everything up and inserting all the settings and all that, you can easily just insert your activities and make like a draft or a mock-up of your runbook. And then you'll, in your head, figure out, oh, I need something in the logic, and you'll insert these activities too. Otherwise, you might end up using a lot of time creating your runbook and then figure out, oh, I forgot something. I actually have to redo a lot of my runbook. That's not a good idea. In this is a mock-up just to show you how you could do it. And the idea is that, first of all, we have a starting runbook. See this one. This one book will create a log in our logging database, and it will trigger the other sample that you just saw before. This run book will not wait for the other example to finish. It will just trigger the example and then shut down. Because if the other example, the main run book fails, we don't want this to start again. We only want the other part to start again. So if we look at the main part of this solution, is that when it starts, the first thing it does is to, first of all, the input, it gets a logging ID. So this logging ID was the ID that the start activity before created. This means that if this runbook restarts, it will still know which logging ID it was running as. This means that the first step can go in and get the status and the information from this ID. Actually, in here in the filter, you set up to look for the ID. In this ID, if we look at, let me just see, show you a second. Go back to this one. You see that when I log something using the success, I have this stage. I have this stage property. And here I can insert the number of the stage that we have reached. So what I'll do in the example here is, first of all, to get the log data. And then depending on the value in, you see, the result stage, if that equals 1, then we add stage 1. And you will then go use the first link right into the database that it has started stage 1. And as I said, if you want, you can then add, for example, custom fields, different custom information in here. But you should know that this type of logging only has one row in the database. You don't get a complete log of every time you have run the success. If you want that, you should create your own activities or scripts to do that. Then we create the user, and if it fails with some specific errors, we'll just go to this activity called failed. For example, if it says this user does already exist, then we don't want it to restart and retry to create the user. But if we have some other problems, like cannot connect to the Active Directory, like temporary problems, then we might want later to restart this runbook. So instead, if we have other errors, we can then go to another activity that... Oh, that was actually the opposite way around. The first one, it says, when I log it here, it says the runbook requires restart equals true, which means that this will be logged into the database that this has an error and needs to be restarted. So we can actually use another activity to find this. If it's an error that cannot... That's not temporary, we can then go to the other one and then insert runbook requires restart equals false. If it's a success, if this is success, we'll go to here and we'll insert the stage number 2 that we have reached, stage number 2. Then we can go create the mailbox, for instance, and we have the same auto restart or no restart. In that case, if that is okay, we'll then go insert stage number 3. So in this way, we can then keep track of how far have our workflow, how our runbooks reached. This means that if it fails and retriggers on another server, if it fails and retriggers on another server, or the same server for that matter. But usually it only fails if the server fails, so that's not a common scenario, unless you only have one runbook server, which I just told you that you shouldn't. So therefore, when it restarts the runbook, it'll go in and check which is the stage, and each of these either go to stage 2 or stage 3. And as I said, we can actually go in and use the restart activity to check which runbooks needs restart. And we can either create a report or we can trigger specific runbooks that needs to be restarted. But you'll probably agree with me when I say this is not very simple solution, especially if you get more stages, it might become hard to make it look pretty like this one. And it might be hard to see what's really going on. So therefore, it's a very good idea to use Service Manager, of course. In Service Manager, we are actually able to, first of all, we are able to synchronize our runbooks into Service Manager. The first thing you do, you import your runbooks into Service Manager using the built-in connector for that. And for each of these runbooks, we can then create a runbook automation activity. These activities can then be inserted into a service request template, which we can use to whenever somebody requests something in the self-service portal. In this case, you'll see I have the same example as before. I have an activity for check OS. We have one for check and enable features, one for check availability, and then one for deploying the website itself. In this case, it has actually checked everything, but for some reason it couldn't deploy the website. Maybe I should have made some better checks. I don't know. But what I can do in this case, since it's in Service Manager, is first of all, my runbooks don't have to have a lot of logic in them. And what I can do is I can right-click on the activity itself, and I can select what's called Return to Activity, and I can then write some message saying, try again. Let me just zoom out a little bit. And when I apply this, it will then re-trigger this action, which should then re-trigger my runbooks inside Orchestrator. This means that I can make a nice setup of each stage which has its own runbooks in there. And of course, as I said, you can download this afterwards. I'll put it on my blog, which you can find on my Twitter, which is on the slides. So, yeah, you can find it. Otherwise, just call me if you can find my telephone number. Anyway, these stages are very similar. What I always do when I do these runbooks in Service Manager is that I have a specific runbook that looks like this. This is the same runbook or a copy of the same runbook I would use in each of every stage in every single service request. This means that I have spent some time making this main control runbook, but it actually doesn't do anything regarding to what I want to do in the stage. What it does is to get some values from Service Manager, like the service request ID or GUID, or the runbook activity ID, the GUID. And it is then able to trigger my main actions here. So we will call this an init runbook, which can initialize the real actions that we want to do. In here, I have a trigger to trigger another runbook which can log my errors to the action log, like I talked about earlier. This is a specific runbook that is in a shared folder from within the solution. You see there's a shared runbooks folder down here that I can reuse in all of my scenarios, all of my request offerings. The next step is actually one that goes back into Service Manager. If the main runbook is successful, if it returns an OK, and I'll get back to that in a second, it will then go in and actually complete the runbook activity in Service Manager. This makes the processing in Service Manager a bit faster because Service Manager doesn't have to wait and each time pull into Orchestrator to check if my runbook is complete. So I complete it. The last thing, I've had some questions every time I've shown this, is why do you have some script down here that actually says error? Well, the thing is that in a case like Service Manager, and could be the same in other systems that can trigger runbooks, is that if the runbook has a successful result, then the runbook will, then of course Service Manager will see it as a success. If it has a warning, it will still see it as a success because in some logics, you will end up in a warning. For example, if you try to delete a folder that's not there and you then try to fix it afterwards, then your final result might be a success, but it will end up as a warning because you had an error in there. That might be intentionally. So in this case, we trigger the runbook. This is probably a success. If this returns not okay, that the logic inside the runbook was not okay, it will then go down here and trigger the logging of the error. This will also be successful. This means that all our activities will be successful, and the runbook will, our service manager will then see this stage as successful. But the last step is something that is then always run. It will then go out and actually use the throw command of PowerShell, and I can actually describe my own error, which means that when I go back and see the result of the runbook, I can then see my own details in there. I can make sure that I have enough information for anybody to figure out, for somebody to figure out what was the problem. Another thing is that when I then have my main runbooks, they are not very heavy. All they need is the activities that needs to be run. And if there is some kind of error, they need to return an error message. So I return either a status error or a status OK. And again, I describe my own error message in here. See, in this case, I was searching for the service request, but it either failed or I got maybe 2 or 3 or 10 service requests and I only was searching for one. So we were expecting one object, and I then insert, for instance, how many objects did you find? Is there any error messages? Which runbook is currently running? This is something this is kind of like the same error message I always use for error logging. So if it's compliant or if it's okay, I'll then in the status return okay instead. And I can then check this in my initiating runbook to see if I have my own OK. And I'm sure that this runbook has run as far as I wanted it to. Yep. In Orchestrator R2, there were some new additions. First of all, 2012 R2 support. And next up, we have the service management automation, which is part of the Windows Azure pack. Probably many of you have heard of it. There's been a lot of sessions here at TechEd about service management automation and Windows Azure pack. So if you haven't, you should go back and check some of those sessions out. To execute this service management automation, we use a part of Orchestrator, which is, first of all, a web service. And so what's called the runbook workers is the same as the old runbook servers, which actually triggers the code itself. And what service management automation is actually PowerShell-based runbooks. Also, there were added the integration pack for SharePoint, which has been in earlier. You could get it from CodePlex, but now it's officially tested and supported. And this has been added too. Also, there was a few bug fixes, which makes Orchestrator run a bit better. The last thing I want to show here or talk about is if you are planning to migrate to service management automation. You might already have runbooks running, or you might, and these runbooks might need to have some new actions added to them. If you already are planning to use service management automation, you should, of course, create all new runbooks in service management automation. But you might want to add some new stuff to already built runbooks. And in that case, if you want to use Orchestrator and make it easy for you to migrate later, you should use the run.net script activity, which means inserting PowerShell scripts, small PowerShell scripts or big ones, in your runbooks. This makes it, of course, easier to convert them either manually or if there is some tool available at some point in time to make it converted. And there is actually a tool available that can help you, which is the Smart for Runbook Conversion. And this tool, you can read about it also at the Building Clouds blog, and you can get it at the TechNet Gallery. And this will convert your runbook logic into a PowerShell script. For example, if you have several of these links, it will make sure to write if sentences, if constructs, and so on in your PowerShell. But of course, all the built-in activities in Orchestrator cannot be converted directly, at least not yet. I don't know if at some point in time it might be possible. I don't know. But it's possible for it to get the PowerShell that you have put in your .NET script activity and insert it into the script. So it will make it easier for you to migrate. So my main points of this session was to start small and simple. If you haven't done Orchestrator before, start playing around with it. And it's usually people say, oh, it's so fun, I just never had time for it. If you can find time for it, and I hope you can, then it's actually pretty fun, at least for a geek like me, to create these runbooks. Planning makes development much faster. There's no reason to start any development before your planning is finished. And use Service Manager for staging support. There is some related content, but this is the last session of the conference, so of course they have already been there, but you can go in and check some of it. There were some labs, and of course there was also some automation of daily tasks with Windows PowerShell. There was the labs, of course, and then there's the service management automation stuff. And this is not all of them, there is more of them there. But that was all I have. Is there any questions? All right. So I'll just say thank you. And you should evaluate.